This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, we'll begin with Stand By for Crime, a series that aired in 1953. This episode's titled A Spy Ring in June. After that, it's 21st Precinct and The Communication, their episode from April 13th, 1955.
Stand by for crime.
Hi, Chuck Morgan, KOP newscaster talking. Well, it was June here in Los Angeles, which meant that the countryside looked just about as it does the other 11 months of the year. You know, the seasons pass you by out here with seldom enough change to let you know what's going on. So in June, I always get a nostalgic feeling for the sight and smell of a countryside, which would justify the immortal lines of James Russell Lowell when he wrote, "And what is so rare as a day in June, then, if ever, come perfect days." Which is why when I arrived at my office on this particular June day and found Pappy Mansfield, owner of KOP, and my blonde secretary, Carol Curtis, waiting with a surprise announcement, I was ready to listen.
Morning, kids.
Hello, Chucky boy.
Good morning, Chuck.
Say, Pappy, about that wetback story, I... Well, what goes? You two been swallowing canaries again?
Chuck, how would you like to take a trip back to New England?
It's June back there, Chuck.
Yeah, well, that figures. It's June here, so it must be June back there. What's it all about, Pappy?
Do you remember that spy who was arrested in San Diego 3 weeks ago? The one who had been handing over information on airplane construction to the Russians?
Dr. Alexander Gadhier. Naturally, that story was almost as hot as the Klaus Fuchs yarn. I ought to remember Gadhier. I interviewed him 3 times.
Think you'd recognize him if you saw him again?
Couldn't miss.
Gadhier's escaped, Chuck.
No kidding, when?
About a week ago. 3 days later, he was captured. He's being held now in the Poke at Burlington, Vermont.
So?
So you're going back to Burlington to identify Gadhier.
Why me?
Well, that's all part of an elaborate plan cooked up by the FBI and our own secret agents.
You see, the man they're holding in Burlington isn't Gadhier at all.
Isn't Gadhier? Now, wait a minute. Glamourpuss, what are you talking?
Wait a minute. You'd better let me fill him in on this, Carol.
Yeah, will you stop butting in, Glamourpuss?
I won't. Go ahead, Pappy.
Thanks. The FBI has information that the spy ring is a rendezvous all the way from Washington up through New England, with the last one at Burlington.
Yeah?
Burlington's population contains enough people of foreign extraction so that most any kind of an accent would go unnoticed. Also, it's a big enough place, catering a good deal to tourists, so that any infiltration of strangers wouldn't be noticed either.
I see. Burlington's pretty close to the Canadian border, too, isn't it?
About 60 miles, but those are details we can go into later. Gadhier escaped while being taken to Washington. Our agents believe he's being smuggled into Canada. They also believe they were so hot on the trail once that the spy ring picked one of their members who looked like Gadhier and let him be captured.
Yeah.
Now, this would take the heat off for a day or two until the mistake was brought to light, which would give Gadhier time to reach the border.
Pretty cute. So I'm to fly to Vermont, tell the cops that Gadhier isn't Gadhier, and then come home again, right?
Well, there's a little more to it than that.
Oh, quite a lot, in fact. One thing, I'm going with you.
You are?
Well, aren't you glad?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I'm not convinced that you meant that.
Quiet, Glamourpuss. What's the rest of the story, Pappy?
Well, when you tell them Gadhier isn't Gadhier, they'll apologize and let him go.
Then they'll follow the man who is posing as Gadhier to where Gadhier is hiding, and that'll be the end of Gadhier, check?
I think you'll find it won't be quite as easy as that.
Huh?
Well, do you want to go? It'll be a hot story if you're in on the capture of the real Gadhier. I've arranged with the network for a TC broadcast.
Of course I want to go. When do I leave?
In an hour. Your tickets, hotel reservations, and instructions are in this envelope.
In an hour? Why, that'll hardly give me time to pack. I said that'll hardly give me time to pack. Oh, Pappy, you wouldn't... Chuck, don't you want me to go with you?
Don't start crying, Glamourpuss. I wouldn't go anywhere without you, and you know it.
Your tickets and hotel reservations are in the same envelope, Carol, so stop worrying.
A TWA Constellation set Glamourpuss and me down at LaGuardia Field in New York the next day at 3 o'clock. 15 minutes later, we were aboard an Eastern Airlines plane bound for Boston. Glamourpuss was like a kid just let out of school.
Chuck, isn't it exciting? We're 3,000 miles away from home, bound for adventure, and it's June.
Yeah, but it's still June back in L.A.
Oh, but here it's different.
How?
There's new life everywhere. Things are growing and, well, things are growing.
Sometimes I think you're growing nuts.
And sometimes, Chuck Morgan, I think you haven't got a romantic bone in your whole body.
Yeah, you do, do you? Come here, you.
Chuck, stewardess.
Never mind, she's probably envious.
We landed at Logan Field in East Boston, 4:45. A taxi took us through the Sumner Tunnel, down Beacon Street to Arlington, and the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Pappy'd reserved rooms for us. Mine overlooked the beautiful public gardens. I stood looking down at them for a long time. I took a deep breath and turned away just as someone knocked at the door. Thinking it was Glamorpus, eager to be out for some more adventure, I opened it and found the most beautiful girl standing there I'd ever seen. With the exception of Glamorpus, of course. Ah, hello.
Hello. May I come in?
Of course, by all means. To be sure, Miss...
I'm Beth Hammond. Your Mr. Mansfield probably told you about me.
No, as a matter of fact, he didn't, but don't let that bother you. Can I fix you a drink?
Oh, no, no thanks. I don't drink. I'm a pilot.
Well, that's... you're a what?
A pilot. If Mr. Mansfield didn't mention me by name, he probably spoke of Hammond Airlines.
Hammond... oh, yeah, that's right. He chartered a plane from them to fly us to... Now, don't tell me that...
That's right. You don't mind flying with a female pilot, I hope.
No. No, on the contrary, it's just that...
That it's unusual. Is that the word you're groping for, Mr. Morgan?
Yes. And will you call me Chuck?
Okay, Chuck.
Thanks.
Most people have the same reaction when they learn they've hired a female pilot. So I always present myself first and offer them a chance to back out if they want to.
No. Don't you even think about such a thing.
Splendid. My brother and I own the airline, and I have umpteenth flying hours to my credit, and...
Uh-oh. Think fast, Chucky boy. Oh, hello, Miss Curtis. Come in, won't you?
Miss Curtis? What in the name of... Oh.
Miss Curtis, I'd like to have you meet Miss Hammond. Miss Hammond, this is my secretary, Miss Curtis.
Hello, Miss Curtis.
Hello. I don't want to seem too personal, but...
Miss Hammond is the pilot of the plane Pappy chartered to fly us to Burlington tomorrow.
Oh, she is.
Good old Pappy. Pappy thinks of everything, doesn't he?
I know what you mean. Well, are you ready to dictate those letters?
Letters? What letters?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have known you'd be busy.
Busy? No, wait.
I'm sorry, too, but the letters really can't wait. They're terribly important.
Of course, I understand. I'll see you both tomorrow, then. 8:00 sharp at Pier 13.
Pier 13?
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't mention it before. We'll fly up in a seaplane.
Oh.
That way I can put you down on Lake Champlain, right at Burlington's front door.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, we'll see you tomorrow, then, at 8.
Right. Goodbye, Miss Curtis. See you tomorrow, Chuck.
Right, sure. Goodbye.
Yeah. Chuck?
Hmm? What?
Oh, don't give me that what stuff. Why was she calling you Chuck, Chuck?
Now, look, Glamorpus...
I don't like that dame. She's too good-looking.
Glamorpus, can I help it if a woman...
She had a wicked gleam in her eye. She called you Chuck, which was forward. And she was rude to me.
Oh, I give up.
I don't. Spy ring or no spy ring, I'm canceling that charter right now and hiring another.
Glamorpus didn't cancel the charter. I didn't let her. So the next morning at 8:00, a cab dropped us at Pier 13 on Atlantic Avenue. And we found Beth Hammond waiting for us there with a speedboat. She was dressed in a pilot's uniform and looked lovelier than ever.
Hello there.
Hi.
You're ahead of time. Jim will take your luggage. That's the plane out there.
Are you sure you know how to fly it, Miss... what was the name?
Hammond. Beth Hammond. And you needn't worry, Miss Curtis. I have umpteenth flying hours to my credit.
Yeah? How many is umpteenth?
A lot. Now look, Glamorpus, either you're going to get some sense into your head and begin acting like a lady, or I'm sending you back to L.A., which would be...
But, Chuck, what are you
talking... I mean it. Make up your mind.
All right. I'm sorry, Miss Hammond.
That's better. Okay, Jim, you grab hold of our luggage, huh?
Thank you.
Glamorpus felt better, and so did I when we got into the air. We skimmed the Custom House Tower and headed northwest. In no time at all, we'd flown over northeastern Massachusetts, cut across the southwestern corner of New Hampshire, and picked up the silvery trace of Lake George in New York State. Directly ahead, serving as a boundary between northern Vermont and New York, was Lake Champlain. I was beginning to regret having blessed a glamour puss and was thinking up some kind of an apology when something happened.
Chuck, something's wrong.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
Any trouble, Miss Hammond?
I don't know. Sounds like a clogged gas line.
Oh.
Clogged gas line? Oh, I knew that woman was to be trusted. Chuck, are we going to crash?
No. Don't get excited, Grandma Puss. This is a seaplane, remember? Right down there is Lake Champlain. We can set down as light as a feather.
Yeah. Well, I don't like it.
Don't worry, folks. We'll be all right.
Sure, we were all right. I knew that, as far as crashing was concerned. But I had to agree with Glamour Puss. I didn't like it either. We hit the water with hardly a splash and taxied close into the shore. Almost at once, a motorboat put out from a tiny inlet. The only unusual thing about this was that the shoreline was a veritable wilderness. What would a motorboat be doing here? There were four men in the boat. Three of them carried objects cradled in their arms. Cradled is right. They were submachine guns.
Now what?
All right, big shot. Sit right where you are.
Chuck, she's got a gun.
Yeah, and it's pointed right down your gullet, Mushmouth. One move and you get it.
Mushmouth? Chuck, did you hear what she called me?
Yeah, I heard her, Glamour Puss.
Well, aren't you going to do something about it?
Yeah, he's going to do something. Get over and open the door, big shot.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad
Chuck,
to accommodate you.
Chuck, for heaven's sakes, are you going to...
You talk too much, Mushmouth. Keep it up and the next one takes a hunk off your ear.
Everything okay, Beth?
Everything's swell, Fred. Take them off.
Okay, you two. Get down into the boat.
Yep. Let me help you, Carol.
Oh, Chuck, this is awful. We're being kidnapped.
I think we'd better do as the man suggests.
You're a smart cookie, Big Shot. Too bad we didn't have time to get better acquainted.
Well, maybe it isn't too late.
Sorry, good-looking. Where you're going, you're not going to have time for anything, sucker.
Now, the conclusion of Stand By for Crime.
Well, the men in the motorboat hadn't been sent out as a welcoming committee by the mayor of Burlington, that's for sure. The three submachine guns kept at the same focal point as we climbed down from the plane. The focal point was us. The man Beth Hammond had called Fred nodded to his seat, then looked up at the female pilot with the umpteenth flying hours.
Okay, Beth, take it away. I don't be waiting for you at the island.
Take good care of our guests, Fred. I'll see you around.
The motorboat swung away and headed for shore. But the three submachine guns, a constant reminder this was no practical joke. We went up a path and came to a shack that was completely concealed in some heavy timber and went inside. The man called Fred pulled out a chair and sat down across the rough table from where I'd been ordered to sit.
Well, everything came off fine, quite according to plan. You must confess you were neatly led into our trap, huh, Morgan?
Yeah, okay, I confess it. Now, what's this all about?
A fair question. I'll get right to the point. How about $5,000?
Well, now, that's a good round figure. Who do I have to murder to get it?
Nobody. Nobody at all. All you have to do is turn around and go back to California.
Now, please bear with me if I seem a bit dense, but just why do you want me to do that?
Isn't the reason obvious?
No.
We don't want you to reach Burlington with the information you have.
Now, look, one of us is way off the beam. Just who do you think I am?
You're Chuck Morgan, newscaster on KOP in Los Angeles. Young lady with you is Carol Curtis, your secretary.
Well, you got me pegged, all right. Now, what's this information I'm supposed to have?
Come on, Morgan. You're not as naive as all that. Well, how about it?
I tell you, I haven't got any information.
I see. Harry, I think Mr. Morgan needs to be convinced that we mean business.
Now, look.
That's enough for now, Harry. Do we understand each other now, Morgan?
Yeah, I think I'm beginning to get an inkling of your plan. But there's still just one trouble.
And what's that?
I haven't got any information.
Our investigators reported we'd likely have trouble with you, Morgan. So I won't waste time offering you more money. Harry.
Hold it.
Well, Morgan?
Just how do you figure you're going to get away with this? When that plane doesn't land at Burlington,
you're going to... Be a fool. The plane will land at Burlington, and there'll be two people in it. Two people named Chuck Morgan and Carol Curtis.
How fantastic can you get? How long do you think you can get away with that masquerade?
Long enough to accomplish our purpose, I think. Like most people, you underestimate the efficiency of our organization. Well, now that you have the facts of the case, you want to change your mind?
Look, I couldn't if I wanted to.
Okay, Morgan. I had hoped you'd be reasonable. This sort of thing is distasteful to me. Work 'em over, Harry.
Harry worked me over all right. He had a special technique. I didn't lose consciousness for at least 5 minutes. I had no way of telling how long I was out, but sunlight was streaming through one of the cabin windows, making a pattern of moving leaves on the plank floor. I lay there, tied hand and foot, studying the moving pattern for a long time, trying to recapture all my senses, trying to figure this thing out. After a while, I looked around and saw I was alone. But a moment later, a door squeaked. Someone came cautiously into the room. I lay without moving, pretending to be still unconscious.
Chuck. Chuck. Oh, what have they done to you?
Glamorpus, how did you get away from that big gorilla?
Well, even big gorillas are susceptible to a come-on smile.
Do you mean that you...
I mean that he's lying in the other room with a lump on his head as big as a grapefruit. Made with a poker he didn't know I was holding.
Glamorpus, if I ever kid you again about being scared, you can hit me over the head with a poker. Untie me, will you?
That's what I'm doing. Turn around here.
Oh, take it easy. Where are the other men?
In a shack behind this one.
Huh?
There's a radio transmitter there, I think. And there's something else, too.
What?
An automobile.
No kidding. Any chance of us getting it?
Well, there might be. As soon as I get you loose, you can take command. After all, it's the man's place to take command.
It was at times like these that I realized Glamorpus was more than a beautiful blonde who played straight man for me. She had what it takes. We went out the front door and sneaked around the cabin. The car was there, parked beside the radio shack. It was our only hope, and a slim one. I stood there, wondering how we could lure the men inside the shack, outside and away from the car, and thinking there wasn't much chance. And suddenly it was done for us.
Fred! Hey, Fred! Come here!
It's the gorilla. I guess I didn't hit him hard enough.
Shh! You did fine, Glamorpus. Here come two of them.
Well, the fourth must still be inside.
Yeah, but it's our only chance. Come on. We took off of that automobile like a couple of jackrabbits, praying the keys would be in the ignition. We reached the car just as the fourth gorilla appeared in the radio shack's doorway. He didn't have his machine gun with him, which was fine with me. Into the car, Glamorpus. My knuckles were sore for days after that one. I heard the car motor start, and I knew we'd got a real break because the keys were there. Then things happened fast. There was a yell from the direction of the cabin, but Carol had the car underway and I was in it. We were a good 50 feet along the wooded road when the first burst of machine gun fire came. Apparently, the marksman was too excited for effective shooting because a bullet sailed merrily overhead. Then Carol jerked the car out of sight around a curve and we were safe, at least for the minute. Keep it up, Glamorpus. You're doing swell, honey.
Chuck, I'm scared. You drive.
Not until we get a lot further away than this. Come on, give her the gun, baby.
What if they have another car?
What if they have? With you at the wheel, they haven't got a chance.
Please, Chuck, just because I hit a man with a poker...
Now, don't start bragging. Drive.
I'm not bragging. I'm just too scared to hold the wheel steady.
All right, Glamorpus, all right. I guess we've got enough of a lead.
If we had time, I'd kiss you. Maybe I'd better anyhow. So we changed places. And a half hour later came to a gravel road. We turned north on this. Apparently the gang back at the cabin only had one car and we were in it. At least there were no signs of us being followed. But they had the boat and they had the radio transmitter. Which gave me an idea. At the first farmhouse we came to, I stopped.
What are we stopping here for?
You see those telephone wires running into that farmhouse?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm going to make a call.
Well, who are you calling and why?
Unless I'm greatly mistaken, there's going to be a reception committee waiting for us at Burlington, and I want to be sure we're prepared for it.
But Chuck, I don't understand. How could you...
I've got time to explain now. I'll give you the details when I get back. Keep the motor running. Well, I made my phone call and got through to the party I wanted. Then Carol and I headed north again. I told her what my idea was, and she told me I was smart to figure it out. And I told her she was a brave, good girl, and we both agreed we were wonderful. By that time, we'd reached the outskirts of Burlington. Burlington, Vermont's largest city and probably one of the most beautiful cities in New England. As we drove along the quiet, tree-shaded streets, it was hard to believe that foreign intrigue of the worst sort was running amok beneath the peaceful scene. We reached the city hall and police station and pulled up near the park in front. As we did so, a young couple, a tall, distinguished-looking man, and a police lieutenant emerged from the police station. It was perfect timing. Carol and I got out of our car and we all met on the sidewalk.
Hello, Miss Hammond. We meet again.
I beg your pardon.
You don't recognize me, eh? Well, I can't blame you for that. Carol tells me your boyfriends were quite successful in changing my appearance. But how about Carol? Do you recognize her?
How could she forget me, mushmouth?
I haven't the faintest idea what either of you people are talking about. Officer, will you please
just
ask
me... Just a minute, Miss Hammond, if that's your name. Is this the man that you just got through telling the police is not Dr. Gad here?
How did you... I mean, I still don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. You and your friend here just told the police and the FBI that you were Carol Curtis and that your friend was me. You were shown the prisoner and stated positively that he wasn't Dr. Alexander Gad here. Oh, it was an ingenious plan, Miss Hammond, cooked up by you and your ring of spies to gain Dr. Gad here's freedom. Because the tall man standing next to you is no phony, as the police thought. He's the real Dr. Gad here.
My plan is still going to work. Run, Dr. Gad here.
Dr. Gad here isn't going to run, Miss Hammond. There's a policeman standing on the steps with a rifle aimed at Dr. Gad here's head.
And there are other policemen all over the place waiting to pick up your pals who are going to try and help you effect this escape. I don't believe you. You're lying. The plan couldn't fail. It was too foolproof. You're lying, both of you. Look out, Chuck.
This time I know exactly how to treat this babe.
Let me alone.
Sure.
Keep your hands off of me, you... swine!
I'll take that gun, sucker.
Well, the Burlington police did their job well. Besides Beth Hammond and her friend, they picked up five other agents who were planted around the station, ready to lend a hand in helping Gad here escape if it were necessary. But they did better than that. One of their planes scoured the east coast of Lake Champlain until they spotted a motorboat that looked like the one I described. It contained Fred and his gang, which added four more to the total take of enemy agents that day. Well, Glamorpus and I spent the night and the next day in Burlington, and I did my broadcast. 2 days later, we were back in L.A. reporting to Pappy Mansfield.
Well, that was nice going, kids. But what I can't figure out is why those two, who were posing as you, just didn't go up to Burlington and tell the police that Gad here wasn't Gad here without bothering to try buying you off.
Well, there are a lot of reasons, Pappy. In the first place, they didn't know how much time they had. In the second place, if they could have bought me, it would have been far less risky.
You see, the fact that Chuck would recognize Gad here as Gad here and not a phony was the information that character Fred was trying to buy from Chuck. Chuck figured it all out when he was unconscious.
When he was unconscious?
Oh, she means, of course, after I returned to consciousness, don't you, Glamorpus?
Yes, of course.
Oh, I see. Well, tell me, what are you two so sweet to each other about all of a sudden?
Pappy, I want to tell you that Carol is one of the bravest girls I've ever known.
One of the bravest?
I mean the bravest.
And I want to tell you, Pappy, that Chucky Boy is one of the, well, I mean, the smartest man I've ever known.
Well, my. Say, Chuck, how do you figure that spy ring knew all about our plans?
Oh, because they're spies, Pappy. That's their business. Now, don't ask me how many agents there are here in L.A. and who they are, because I don't know. You talk to the cops or the FBI or somebody. But all I know is they have some beauties among them. Ah, that Beth Hammond, for one, what a dish.
Chuck Morgan.
But Glamorpus, she was beautiful. She had to be.
What do you mean she had to be?
Poor Glamorpus. She was supposed to be the secretary of Chuck Morgan, wasn't she? And isn't Chuck Morgan's secretary the most beautiful girl in the world?
Oh, Chucky boy, you cute. Oh, what a line you've got. And I love it.
First Precinct, Sergeant Waters. Yeah, that's right. A verification of the ownership is what we want. Connecticut registration 3T for Thomas 152. Well, what do you have?
You are by transcription in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
We're holding the car and the occupants. Well, let me know as soon as you're here. All right. Okay.
21st Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 9/10 of a square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
The 21st, 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st. I was working my day tour, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. It was a bright sunny morning. I arrived at the station house at 7:35, signed the blotter, and went into my office to change to uniform. Then I read over reports and communications that had accumulated since I was last on duty 24 hours earlier. Just before 8, I walked out into the muster room and around behind the desk. Shortly on the hour, Lieutenant Gorman, the desk officer for the oncoming tour, sounded the bell, and the 66 men who would patrol the precinct on foot and in sector cars marched out of the back room on command of the patrol sergeant. The platoon halted, faced the desk, and the sergeant reported the men inspected. Then I called the roll, gave them special instructions and orders, and on the command, post your platoon, they marched out the front door. Among the men who turned out was Patrolman Joseph A. Hearn, 27 years old, in the job 4 years, and assigned until 9 a.m. to school crossing duty at 81st Street and 2nd Avenue. There, he directed traffic and assisted school children in crossing the street for nearly an hour. He was just about to leave for his regular post when he saw a car approaching the intersection driving east on 81st Street from 3rd Avenue, the wrong way in a one-way street. He stepped out into the street, waited for the car to approach, and signaled it to a stop. A man was driving. A woman sat alongside of him.
I'm sorry, officer. Don't you look at the signs? I live in Brooklyn. I got a little bit mixed up.
Didn't know it was one way till after you turned in.
Yeah, I saw the traffic going the other way, and I said, uh-oh. Then I figured rather than back out into 3rd Avenue, it'd be safer to come all the way through to 2nd. You know what I mean, officer? Much safer.
Yeah, sure, I know.
I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with the neighborhood. I'll be careful.
Pull around the corner and stop. You're blocking traffic here.
Look, officer, what do you say? How about a break,
well,
huh?
Just pull around the corner. I'll walk over there.
That bum.
That's his fault. You look where you're going, these things wouldn't happen. Wait a minute. Wait for the lights. Want to make it worse?
I could shoot down the avenue and lose them in a minute.
You out of your mind. Send your ticket. Run, they get you good. Take the ticket and shut up.
Myra, I'm carrying.
You're kidding.
It's in my top coat pocket. Take the gun and put it in your purse.
What do I want with that?
Take it. It won't bother you.
All right. Go ahead, scream.
You got it?
I got it. I don't know why.
Good, then.
All right, let me see your operator's license and registration.
Yeah, sure. Myra, look in the glove compartment there for the registration.
Yeah.
You could be a good guy, couldn't you, officer? It's not like I did something. Yeah, here's the license.
Yeah.
Myra? Where's the registration? Come on, huh?
I can't find it in here.
Well, he said it was in there.
This car belong to you?
As a matter of fact, it don't belong to my brother.
What's your brother's name?
Arthur Hope.
Where does he live?
In Ellison, Connecticut.
Huh?
Where's that? It's up near Bridgeport.
Oh. Used to live at this address? 736 Partridge Street, Brooklyn?
Yep, that's right.
When did your brother lend you the car?
Sunday. Sunday, when we were up there to his house. Am I right, Myra? Sunday?
Yeah, my husband needed a car this week for business, and his brother let him have.
Mm-hmm.
He told me the registration was in the glove compartment. Weren't you there when he said that, Ma?
Yes, that's where he said it was.
Did you look good?
It's not in there.
All right, give me the ignition keys a minute.
What for?
I want to check the license plate in the back.
You don't need the keys for that, do you?
Just give them here.
See?
I'll just sit there.
We should have run for it, I told you.
Now, look, Ed.
Give me back the gun.
What do you want with it?
Give it here.
It's coming, coming.
Well, I'm sorry, folks, but we're going to have to go down to the station house.
Oh, now, look, officer, why?
Oh, we have to get straightened out on the ownership of this car.
Well, it's my brother's. I told you that.
Oh, yeah? Well, we'll just have to make sure. Oh, pull the seat up while getting back.
What'd you say?
Pull the seat back.
Oh, okay. I wish we could get this straightened out.
We will. Yeah. Here are the keys.
Yeah.
Now, close the door. Head the way you're going. I'll tell you when it's time.
Can't you just give me a ticket and let it go at that? I'd like to save the time.
You've already lost it, mister, so just get this thing going before you lose any more.
Okay.
For most traffic offenses, the law specifies that a police officer in the city of New York shall issue a summons answerable in traffic court on a specific day. For the offense of operating a motor vehicle without possession of proof of ownership, however, the driver is requested to accompany the officer to the station house where a check is made to verify ownership of the automobile. Officers confronted with such a situation are under instructions to be extremely cautious because the car may turn out to be stolen or the occupants armed and dangerous. The ride to the station house was without incident until they turned into the block on Patrolman Ahern's instructions.
All right, you you see the station house up there?
Yeah.
Pull up in front of it.
Okay.
Here, park in that space.
It says reserved for police. They won't get a ticket for parking there, too, will they?
Pull in.
Okay. How am I? Close enough?
You're right on the curb.
All right, let me get out first. Scoot up a little bit, Maya.
How much do you want me to scoot?
It's all right, I can make it.
Guess I better lock it up, huh?
Yeah, you better. Okay, this way.
How long will we be here?
I couldn't tell you, lady.
Well, come on, Ed.
Yeah, I'm coming. Lock it up.
Yeah. All right, it's locked.
All right.
Next time you'll know to get the registration.
So I'll know.
All right, I'll get the bill. Go ahead. Okay. Walk up to the desk there.
This is going to kill the whole morning. I know it.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Walker.
All right, this is good right here.
Now, what have you got, Ahern?
Lieutenant, I thought I was going down.
Hold it.
CWSC
on the line.
All right, Sergeant.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Gorman, desk officer at the 21st. Listen, the patrolman on post reports a leaking fire hydrant at 93rd Street and Madison Avenue. Yeah, that's what he said. All right, okay. Yeah, he says he thinks there's something wrong with the shutoff now. Okay. Yeah.
Sergeant, when Meister rings in, tell him DWSC is on the way up to repair that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Ahern.
I stopped him for driving the wrong way in East 81st Street, Lieutenant. He had no registration for the car.
It's my brother's car. He let me borrow it. Did he have an operator's license?
Yes, sir. His name is Edward Holt, 736 Patrick Street, Brooklyn.
His brother lent him the car. I'll vouch for that, all right.
Are you Mrs. Holt?
That's
What is your brother's name?
Arthur Holt.
And what is his address?
Rural Route 2, Elliston, Connecticut.
Connecticut registration, I think?
Yes, sir. 1952 Chevrolet two-door painted tan.
Days it is.
Registration number is 3T152.
T for Thomas?
Yes, sir.
All right. Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Communications Bureau on here.
Yes.
Hello, CB. Lieutenant Gorman at the 21st. Yeah. Now, look, we've got a man operating a motor vehicle with no registration certificate. His name is Edward Holt, 736 Patrick Street, Brooklyn. That's H-O-U-L-T-S. Yeah.
He claims his brother is the owner of the automobile, and he is using it with the brother's permission. The brother's name is Arthur Holt. Rural Route 2. Elliston, Connecticut. Elliston. Yeah, that's right. The car is a 1952 Chevy two-door, painted tan. Connecticut registration 3, T for Thomas, 152. All right. Yeah. All right, Mr. Holt, they're checking it out.
Well, how long will it take?
Well, they have to telepath to the Connecticut State Police and wait for an answer.
We might be here a couple of hours.
I don't think it'll take that long.
This is a fine thing. Holding yourself like this. I never heard of such a thing.
All right. Walk right straight up there.
Oh, I heard the detectives are going to book a prisoner. Now, would you take these people over there, please?
Come on, Joe. Let's go. You haven't got all day.
I got plenty of time.
Let's go right over there, Mr. Holt.
Stand right up to the railway, Joe.
He gets nervous. We got to wait.
He's going to jail. Listen, officer, how long do you think this will take? Really, now, I mean, don't kid me.
As soon as they hear back from Connecticut.
I don't see what they got to do up there.
They have to verify ownership of the car.
It's my brother's, I'm telling you.
We'll get the word soon.
Then what do I have to do?
Well, you'll have to appear in court later. I've got to write a summons for driving without a registration for you and going the wrong way in a one-way street.
I forgot about that one already.
All right.
Yes, Sergeant?
Can I see you over here a minute?
Yes, sir. Well, you two stay right here.
You've got no place to go.
Get back in a second.
This is some mess.
Never mind the mess. I'm getting worried.
Why should you be worried? I'm the one who has it in my pocketbook.
I'm getting worried because with all these cops around here looking at us, they're liable to start asking questions about other things in that car. I think you ought to get rid of the gun.
Get rid of it? Mm. When are we going to get rid of it?
Go to the ladies' room. Put it in the wastebasket in the bottom.
You out of your mind?
You've got to get rid of it.
Listen, you gave it to me.
All right.
Are you people being taken care of, all right?
Oh, yeah, thanks. We're waiting until they check on something. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
I brought them in, Captain. Mr. and Mrs. Holt. Captain Kennelly.
Hi.
How do you do?
We got no complaint against this policeman, Captain. He was only doing what he was supposed to do, but I told him it was my brother's car, and we got to wait around. We got to wait around for who knows how long.
He was driving the wrong way on 81st Street, and he had no ownership certificate.
His brother said he left it in the glove compartment when he got in the car.
Well, what's taking so long, huh?
It's a Connecticut car, Captain.
Oh.
Listen, where's the ladies' room here?
Well, there isn't any ladies' room in the station house.
There isn't?
No, not in this station house.
Come on, you're kidding.
Well, all our female prisoners go to the 19th precinct, where the police women are. We have no facilities here.
Harry?
Yes, sir?
Bring those people back over here now.
Yes, sir. Okay, folks.
Hey, here we go again.
Oh, what's doing, Red?
Oh, it's pretty quiet, Captain.
Let's hope it stays that way.
Oh. I'd sure like to know what kind of a runaround I'm getting here.
Oh, what do you mean?
I asked him if I could go outside to get a cup of coffee, and he said no, I couldn't.
I was the one that was driving the car. She didn't have anything to do with it. Why can't she go out?
Because if that car turns out to be stolen, the law says that not only the driver is involved, every occupant is.
The car is not stolen. It belongs to my brother.
Mr. Holtz, right now we don't know that your brother owns the car. In fact, we don't even know that you have a brother. Sector car number 3 came by the house for me, and I went out on patrol of the precinct at 9:25 a.m. 20 minutes later, however, the Communications Bureau instructed the desk officer of the 21st to assign temporarily to the 15th precinct one radio motor patrol car and its crew to assist in an unusual occurrence, the breaking of a water main and the flooding of the street and the subway station. In order that we not be left undermanned on patrol, I returned to the station house and instructed Patrolman Farrell, the operator of sector car number 3, to pick up his recorder, Patrolman Meister, who had been assigned to a fixed post, and resume patrol of his regular sector. I got out of the car in front of the station house, crossed the sidewalk, walked up the stone steps, and into the muster room.
Captain.
Yes?
This is to you, Lieutenant King.
Oh, all right. Tell him to hold on. As soon as I sign the blotter.
Yes, sir. He just came in the station house, Lieutenant. He'll be with you as soon as he signs the blotter. No, he's got nobody with him.
Okay, Sergeant. I'll take it in my office.
Yes, sir.
He's going to take it in his office, Lieutenant.
I want to talk to the captain.
Yes, what's the trouble?
The captain can't help you, Mr. Holt.
Well, I can ask him. All right, I'll be with you in a minute. I've got a phone call waiting.
I'm waiting, too.
The first precinct, Captain Kennelly.
Lieutenant King, Captain.
Yes, Matt.
Captain, do you remember that boy who tried to cut his wrist on the bar in the cell last December?
Yes, Matt. What about him?
Well, he's going to bat on that murder charge next week. The district attorney thinks his lawyer might call you as a defense witness.
Oh, what do they want me for?
Well, you made the investigation at the time. They think they can establish insanity by reason of the fact that he attempted suicide.
Oh?
I'm going downtown for a conference with a trial assistant this afternoon.
All right, Matt. What time?
Well, I'm due down there at 1. I'll leave here about 12:30.
Okay, you meet me in my office.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
That's okay.
There he comes.
All right, now what's the trouble?
We're just waiting for word, Captain.
That's right. We're getting awful tired of standing around here.
Well, all right, I'll see what I can do.
We'd certainly appreciate it. You know, it's one thing if I did something really out of the ordinary, but it's my brother's car, and my wife is willing to vouch for that.
Yes, we know all about that, Mr. Holtz, but it takes time to check these things out.
Well, we've been here for time. We've been here for plenty of time.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
Well, we'd certainly appreciate it, Captain.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Waters. Hey, Red, how come you haven't heard on that Connecticut car yet?
Well, we're waiting, Captain.
Well, we're short-handed on patrol this tour. I'd like to get Ahern back on the job.
So would I, Captain. I just rang down to CB. They haven't had any word from the Connecticut State Police yet.
Well, why don't you send them upstairs? Let the detectives worry about it.
Okay?
Ahern.
Yes, sir?
Would you come over here with Mr. and Mrs. Holtz?
Yes, sir.
Oh, how are they doing on that break in the water main downtown? You think we'll get our car back soon?
Well, they've got the trouble located. It's a problem of traffic now, Captain.
Oh, good.
Are we going to be able to go now?
Well, we haven't had any word yet, Mrs. Holtz. Listen, do you know how long it's been? Do you know how long we've been waiting around here?
We're trying to get you out as fast as we can.
Well, it certainly doesn't look like it. That's all I can say.
Well, we're going to send you up to the detectives and let them get it straightened out.
The detectives?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what have they got to do with it? Listen, Captain, I'm a guy with a lot of patience, but after all, we've been hanging around here almost an hour. And now with the detectives. All I ask you to do is be reasonable.
Yeah, well, all we ask you to do is comply with the law and have a registration certificate with you when you operate an automobile. Who's catching upstairs, Sergeant?
The local, Lieutenant.
Sure is a fine way to do things.
I'll be in my office, Red.
Yes, sir.
Can't go out to get a cup of coffee. Get out of my nose.
Sergeant, give me the look on here.
Yes, sir.
I think
he
did something.
All right, Myra, all right. Hello, lad. It's Lieutenant
Gorman. Yeah.
Look, I'm sending Ahern up with the couple. Well, we're waiting for verification of ownership of the car he was driving. Hmm? Oh, all right. Yeah, hold on. Ahern.
Yes, sir?
Go on upstairs with him and see the look of him.
Okay, Lieutenant. Come on.
Clear the post. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
lad.
Okay.
Right through there.
Oh, the name is Holt.
Yeah, well, look at this. Why couldn't we stay in here if they're standing out there?
This is the back room. It's the police officers.
Are they better than people?
Up the stairs.
Oh!
Hmm?
Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I don't have enough. Now I got to get a run in my stocking.
Well, that's my fault, too.
Here. Hold my pocketbook.
What do I want it?
Hold it.
All right.
I felt it
real. Yeah, you're always feeling things. You got a wife like that?
No, I'm not married.
Smart.
What kind of crack is that?
Let's go upstairs.
Here, take back your purse.
Will it kill you to hold it a minute?
It might. You never can tell. Here.
All right.
In there.
I think this will take very long.
It all depends when we hear about the car. Okay. Walk right over there.
Over here, honey?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, lad, this is Mr. and Mrs. Holt.
Oh, yeah. Lieutenant Gorman told me about them. Now, look, folks, I'm going to make another call down to the Communications Bureau and see if they heard from Connecticut yet.
Wouldn't the best thing be to call Connecticut?
Well, everything has to be cleared through CB. Now, I want to finish this thing up, and I'll get right on it. Now, why don't you go over and sit down on that bench for a minute?
Over there?
Yeah, make yourself comfortable.
Oh, you want to get some coffee? He'll call lunch in it for you. He'll send it over.
No, that's all right. I don't feel like it now.
The fact of the matter is, she does feel like it. Only she doesn't like coffee out of a paper cup. Look, why don't you be a good guy and let her go out to the luncheonette?
Look, I told you about that. We can't let either of you go out until we get an answer on the car.
Sit down, Ed. There's no sense standing up anymore.
Yeah. What a way to run a railroad.
All right, can I see you a minute?
Yeah. I'll be right back.
We're not going anyplace. We'll be here.
Now, give me what you got on these people. I'll get right on.
Yeah. He was coming down a one-way street.
So why didn't you take it when you had my purse?
Take what?
What do you think?
Well, do you think I'm crazy? I'm going to start anything in here. I couldn't take 2 cents.
Oh, I'm stuck with it.
You're not stuck with it.
What do you mean I'm not stuck with it? I got it. I'm the one that got the beef again.
There won't be no beef, because they ain't going to find it. They won't look.
We can read their minds.
And what's all the conversation over there?
Look, we're married to each other. Aren't we allowed to talk even?
Well, as long as I can hear what you're saying, can you?
Well,
isn't it
personal?
Concentration, champ.
There's nothing personal in a police station, lady. Can I see your operator's license, Mr. Holt?
They looked at it downstairs.
Well, I'd like to look at it up here.
Here. Here you are.
Would you take it out of the wallet?
Honest. There.
Mm-hmm. This way you reside at the present time, 736 Patrick Street, Brooklyn?
Yes.
You ever been arrested, Mr. Holt?
Yeah, I went through a red light about a year ago out in Forest Hills. Says that in the license there, don't it?
And I'm in for a crime.
No, what do you think I am?
Do you have any other identification besides this?
How about this, my Social Security card? Want me to take that out, too?
No, I can see it, fine. Do you have any identification on you, Mrs. Holt?
Look, she's my wife. I identify her.
I'd like her to identify herself. Do you have anything in your purse?
Like what?
Like a driver's license.
I don't drive.
Social security card, anything?
No, I got nothing.
Well, couldn't you look and see?
I know I got nothing. I know what I carry in my purse. I carry a little bit of money and a lipstick and a handkerchief. Also a comb and a compact, and that's all.
Well, why don't you take a look? Maybe you've got a letter or something in there.
I know what I've got. I've got nothing.
But she told you she's got no identification. Why don't you leave her alone? She's got nothing to do with it anyway. I was driving the car.
Well, that doesn't make any difference.
Want me to get that lunch?
No, I'll take it.
Okay.
21st Squad, Detective DeLuca. No, he's not here. Yeah, he's working, but he's out on an investigation. Yeah, sure. Who? Yeah, all right, I'll tell him. Yeah, I'll tell him. You say you've got no identification?
I told you I didn't.
Well?
DeLuca.
Oh, yeah, Lieutenant.
Where's Goldman?
Down at the grand jury, Lieutenant.
Oh, yeah. Is ring in yet?
No, sir, not yet.
First one that rings in or comes in, let me know, will you? I've got a little job to be done.
Well, Scanlon and Vitale are out on patrol. Shall I put a call out for them?
No, it's not that important. How do you do?
Oh, this is Mr. and Mrs. Holt. Lieutenant King, commanding officer, 21st Detective Squad. Ahern stopped them for driving the wrong way in a one-way street, Lieutenant. They had no registration for the car.
Is it your car?
No, it's my brother's. He lent it to me. We're getting some runaround here, Lieutenant. They're taking forever to find out about it. We've just been sitting around.
Well, it'll get straightened out.
I know it will, but when? That's the point.
Now, look, Mr. Holt, why don't you stop complaining, huh? You were the one who was at fault. We're doing the best we can.
I'll bet you are.
Ed.
I'm sitting here like an idiot. Nobody does anything.
Ed, now cut it out.
I won't cut it out. I got a right to talk.
Look, mister, you better take your wife's advice and just calm down. Law gets straightened out.
Listen,
what's the use? Okay, Lud. Let me know when you hear from somebody.
Yes, sir. You ought to take it easy, mister. That's not going to get you any place.
That's what I said.
I'm nuts. Everybody tells me to take it easy.
I'll get it, Aaron.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
21st Squad.
You're just making big trouble for yourself. That's all you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's all your own fault anyway.
Don't lecture me, will you, Myron?
Don't lecture you.
That's what I said.
You get yourself in a jam and give me a hard time.
Okay, folks.
Hmm?
We got the word. Everything's all right.
You got the word?
Yeah. The Communications Bureau got a teletype. The Connecticut State Police spoke to your brother at his job. He confirms he lent you the car.
There, you see? What did I tell you?
Well, we can go on downstairs now.
What, you mean we got something else to...
Oh, come on, Ed. For crying out loud. Oh,
for crying out loud, me, will you? You for crying out loud me enough today.
I didn't, but you had it come.
Okay.
You have plenty coming. You
Sergeant, it's okay. They started slugging away at each other, Captain. I'll get her home, I'll kill her.
Yeah, that's what you
said. All right. What did she hit him with? Look at the welts on his face.
A pocketbook, I think.
I hammered my fist.
Let's see that pocketbook. Look, Captain, it's all over. The whole thing's over. Just what he said, we forget it. Happens all the time. And we still love each other. And right, Myra?
Step over here and empty that purse on the table.
Look, you? Let's just forget it, huh, Captain?
I want to see what's in that purse.
Go on, walk over to the table.
I told you, like a peanut.
Captain, will you listen a minute?
Open the purse and dump out the contents.
Look, Captain, is this a little family fun?
Open it up.
All right.
Myra, where'd you get that?
What do you mean, where did I get it? You passed it to me.
I never seen it before in my life.
All right, just step back.
Never seen it before in your life? Not even last week when you stuck up that Royal Society with it?
Oh, baby. Well, looks like you made yourself a good collar, huh?
Dumb luck, that's what it was. Dumb luck.
Yeah. Well, whatever it was, here you are. And that's what counts.
First Precinct, Sergeant Waters. Now, where's this? Yeah? Yeah? Well, who's at that trade? Oh, you don't, huh? Well, where's the man with the knife?
Where?
And so it goes. Around the clock, through the week, every day, every year. The police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh and blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring, or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct Transcribed, the factual account of the way the police work in the world's largest city, is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolman's Benevolent Association, an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. Everett Sloan in the role of Captain Kennelly, Ken Lynch as Lieutenant King, Harold Stone as Sergeant Waters. Featured in tonight's cast were Frank Moss, Elspeth Eric, John Larkin, Mandel Kramer, and John Sylvester. Written and directed by Stanley Niff. George Bryan speaking.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. I will be back next Wednesday with more, but in the meantime, you can find all the other shows, past episodes from this one, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so from the website as well. Just click on the donation information button for more on that. Thank you very much to those of you who have. Thank you very much for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.